Hello, hello everyone. Welcome back. Welcome back. I am Shu Allegra, founder of Grace and Hope Consulting, where we empower people to achieve mental and emotional wellness, reach their full potential, and live fulfilling lives. And we are talking about resilience. Well, everything we do here involves about resilience, but it's such a pleasure to have, you know, new and old friends to the table to kind of talk about what does resilience look like in their life? You know, what they've learned through it so that we can, you know, reap those nuggets, you know, wisdom from them and apply that in our own lives as well. So today I have Holly with me. Welcome, Holly.
Hello.
Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So we can just, you know, kick it off if you don't mind kind of sharing about who you are, what you do, where you're located.
Sure. So I'm Holly Miller. I teach high school math. I'm located in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And right now I'm actually on medical leave from teaching because I am going through chemotherapy for my follicular lymphoma.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for all that you do. And so I know some of you might have heard of Holly before because she's been on the podcast before and I've interviewed her, you know, in the past, but I wanted to kind of catch up with her again and think about, you know, things she's learning on this side of resilience, right? This side of the journey. Well, resilience, I think resilience that you're learning for this side of the journey. So if you don't mind just even sharing a little bit of, you know, how you got here per se, you know, not as a person, oh, I know how we got here, right? Blame my parents. But my point is like, you know, to get here to this season of life where you had to take time off work. Like, when did you even find out about the diagnosis?
Right. So it was back in October when I realized I had some enlarged lymph nodes. So I went to the doctor and I always have like reactive lymph nodes like my whole life. So I wasn't super concerned, but she found a lot of other places where I had enlarged lymph nodes. And she was like, hey, I don't want to scare you, but you know, this could be lymphoma. And I think, you know, we need to do some further tests. So all through November, I was getting all of these different biopsies and scans and blood work. And let me just say, like, I'm a huge chicken when it comes to that stuff. Like when it comes to like blood work, I usually like pass out. Like I'm not good with this. And I'm like terrified of doctors. I have like the white coat syndrome where like, you know, my blood pressure shoots up when they try to take it. And yeah, so I had to go through all of that. And then in December, early December, they told me it was lymphoma. And at first we thought it was more of a low grade lymphoma. It's a little different than most cancers. A lot of times they don't treat it right away. They do something called waiting and watching, and they'll just kind of monitor and see how it goes. But then after we did a scan of my full body, we realized that they call them innumerable nodes. I had so many places where the cancer was that they just couldn't even like count them. So they decided that we had to do chemotherapy. And so that was the end of January where I was informed that I'm going to have to go through some chemotherapy. And my goal was to try to work through some of it. Mm-hmm. So I have six rounds I have to do. It's once every 3 weeks. And so I did my first round and I was feeling okay. And I went to work. I got my chemotherapy on a Friday and I went to work that Monday. And oh my goodness, by the end of the day, like I sent my husband this picture of like my head on my desk. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think I can even drive myself home. I'm so tired. Yeah. And it was back when we were still wearing masks and dry mouth is a big symptom. And I had, my mouth was so dry from teaching in a mask all day. And my throat was so sore. I could like barely swallow water. And I'm like, I need to make this my priority, my treatment. So yeah, that's when I made the decision. It was like one day back after chemotherapy and I'm like, all right, we need to reassess.
Yeah. Wow. And I have to say, I can't even imagine. So from November, I think like, oh, this thing might be a little abnormal, but even not abnormal because you said you were, you know, used to having, you know, little enlarged lymph nodes here and there. So it was like, this is just how my body reacts to things, you know, things right. happen. And so from going for, oh, this is nothing to worry about because it's, you know, I'm familiar with it, to like, oh, this could be something huge. And then only having 2 months to even adjust to that reality.
Right.
You know, and then when you find out in November, it's like, well, maybe it's nothing too bad. And then it's like, oh no, this is like really bad. Now we have to go for chemo and all of that, like in 2 months. Yes. And I can't even imagine the emotional toll of it. So if you don't mind just sharing, like how were you dealing with all those changes, huge changes, the news, the adjusting to know how your body was reacting to the treatment, and just the fact that, oh, I have this. This is for real.
Right. Yeah. When I was first informed I had lymphoma, it was so strange how calm I was. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And I remember, like, you know, the doctor talking with me and, you know, being like, are you okay? Is there anybody here with you that, like, you know, we need to talk to? And I was like, no, I'm okay. I think I was like so calm that I think like I worried them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do also have anxiety and depression. So, you know, all through the testing before I got to diagnosis, it was almost a month, if not almost close to 2 months, of me just waiting to hear back from testing. And so, of course, you know, I sometimes say like anxiety is my superpower. Like,
yeah.
So I like,
well, you know, like, yeah,
I went down every road, like in my mind. And I remember talking with my sister and she's like, what is the worst case scenario? And I've learned that as like a tool, like what is the worst mm-hmm, thing mm-hmm. that could happen? And so, you know, I kind of acted that out in my
prepare
mind.
That in your, yeah, prepare your
react
mind
to that. Yeah.
So that you're kind of ready to face it when you get there. Yeah.
Right. If you get there. So I feel like when it got to the diagnosis stage, I was actually in a good space mentally, but mm-hmm. I went through like the rainbow of like, no, this can't be right. And then like, okay, it's cancer, but is it really cancer? You know, like they say that it's more of a chronic condition. A lot of people, you know, if it's a low grade, and I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe it's not that big of a deal. You know, and then they told me this is something that I'm going to have to monitor my whole life. Like sometimes I'm going to have to go through treatment. Sometimes, you know, I'll be in remission, but it's not something that can be cured. So then, you know, I was like wrestling with my mortality, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm going to have this my whole life. And like I said, I'm like terrified of doctors and like mm-hmm. to get the PET scans twice a year, I have to get an IV and it took them 6 sticks to get me last time. So it's like a whole mental game as well as physical. And, you know, there were times where I was very sad about it. You know, I was like, I have to deal with this the rest of my life. And like, why? But, you know, I think I tend to, let myself feel those feelings and be sad. You know, I had a couple of days where like, I just cried a bunch and, you know, that's okay. But I tried to make sure I didn't lose sight of the hope. You know, I said, I'm sad today, but I'm not hopeless. And I think it's important to kind of think about that. There's so many good things to live for and so many things, you know, that I'm grateful for. So there's a lot of, I said, you know, there's a lot of good days out there, even if I have some bad ones. So
I just love your perspective and that mindset, you know, the way you look at things definitely impacts how you feel about them, what you do about them, right? And I so echo kind of, you know, anxiety being a superpower, because when you go for anxiety, like you go for the up and down of like what could, but what ifs, right? And then when you have the right tools, then you actually train your brain to use that what if to for planning. And often people think that, you know, the cure, if you want, or the reversal anxiety is calm, you know, per se, but I think the reverse anxiety is preparation. Because when you're being anxious, because you're worrying about what's going to happen next, what could happen in the future. So if you plan out for it, it reduces your level of anxiety. And so that worst case scenario allows you, reinforces you to start planning about what if this happened, what could I do about it? So then you feel prepared. When you feel prepared, there's less anxiety that you experience in that moment, right? So thank you for bringing that up. And also acknowledging that many people don't realize when we go for chronic illnesses, there's that, like you say, that whole roller coaster of emotion, and a lot of it can be lumped in grief.
Yeah.
Right? You're grieving the life that you have now, mm-hmm. the life that you thought you'll have tomorrow and next year, and then sometimes facing your own mortality and like, oh, there might not be no life, no few months. And this is not to scare anybody. I know for me, facing my mortality, when I had the stroke at 33, it was like, whoa, like life could stop here. I could be gone this young. And it's like, there's still a lot of things I want to do. Like you said, a lot of things to look forward to. And that allowed me to shift my mindset, right? It's like, okay, now instead of focusing, now that I'm here, you know, I'm still here, and whatever life brings up, brings, you know, brings its way, instead of focusing on all the acknowledging the things that I've lost, you know, the mobility back then, it was even, my vision was impaired. I still have some mild vision impairment, you know, my memory, my speech, and like, there's all these things that I'm still working through, but then I still plenty for things to look forward to. So with resilience, also the thing that the point I was trying to make here is, you know, if someone, and I actually interview talked about it, with, you know, came out, I was afraid, but kind of resilience forward. So it's almost like you're still planning ahead when, for all of us, when we have something to look forward to, it gives us hope.
Right.
Even in the middle of very disappointing and very challenging situation, because now you're like, this rest right now, it hurts. Yes, right now, you know, I'm too tired. I can't even do one more treatment. I want to see one more needle. Yeah. For me, it was like one more, no, if the speech therapist comes to tell me to speak one more time, I'm going to like tell you, you come speak for me, because I'm speaking, nothing is coming out. I'm going to move my lips, no words comes out. You know, it was so frustrating, right? But in this moment, then I'm like, I had to look forward to doing things with my kids. Look forward to what I enjoy doing, you know, for you is teaching. For me, it was like doing this, you know, speaking and writing. I'm like, all the things and dreams that I wanted to do, I still have not accomplished in half of them. And so what helped me in my recovery was, again, planning ahead, planning, looking forward. And today I can honestly say that I've done more in the past 4 years, you know, I guess soon it'll be 5 years this year of the stroke, since my stroke, 5 years that I've done the previous 33. Not because I do lack of trying, but because now it was more intentional.
Right.
Like when you face your own mortality, it changes the way you see life. I don't take anything for granted anymore. Every day becomes meaningful. Every day has purpose. And every day I want to leave into the world more than I came, more than I saw, more than I took, per se.
Right.
So thanks for even for bringing that up. And it's okay. I'm sure it was hard, but it's okay to acknowledge those feelings. For anyone listening or watching, when you're going through those changes, those, you know, big and bad news, it's okay to acknowledge, hey, this sucks. Let's call it and say what it is. It should be this way. Should be going for this. This is not fun. And then it's like, okay, but here I am. So what do I do from, where do I go from here? What do I do about this? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so for you, then when you get to that point, it's like, you know, looking, like you say, holding on to hope and looking ahead, I'm sure there are others, you know, kind of supporting you, because support system is huge for all of us, you know. So for you, like, what are those things, maybe internal strength, but also those support around you that help you to continue, you know, to this day, holding on to that hope, you know,
right.
And although, you know, there's all this treatment, and now, you know, we'll talk a little bit about even the leave of absence, but if you just want to share, like, what keeps you hoping, and who keeps you hoping, per se?
Well, obviously, the big one is my husband and my family. You know, they let me be mad. I remember one time my mom came out for one of my surgeries, and they had to reschedule it, and I took off work. Mm-hmm. This was when I was still working through stuff, and I was so mad, and she drove me, and I said, "Mom, I'm going to do a lot of swearing right now, because I'm just so mad, and I never swear in front of my mom." Mm-hmm. And, you know, and she was like, "You know what? Just let it rip. It's okay. You can be mad." And, mm-hmm. You know, just the whole frustrating process, but, you know, my family and my husband just like letting me feel what I feel. Mm-hmm. My coworkers are amazing. They set up a meal train for me. So they drop food off. They also send me happy mail. Like every day I get a card mm-hmm. from somebody at my work. Mm-hmm. So that's been awesome. My friends obviously have been there for me, and my church especially too. Mm-hmm. They even gave me a donation to help with my unpaid time off. Mm-hmm. I know how blessed I am to be able to have those resources, you know, because when I was looking at the unpaid time, I was like, how are we going to do this? You know, and my husband's like, we'll figure it out. Like, you need to take the time to get better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like God really does provide, you know, it's amazing. I said to my husband, you know, I'm scared to take this step. And he said, like, just look at our past though. Look at all of the things that we've overcome just because we trusted, you know, and he's right. And again, you know, God provided. So.
And that's again, another point there for resilience, having the support system. People might not be able to fix your situation, but research again proved the more connected we are, the less we crumble at the face of adversity, no matter what it is. Just knowing that someone is going through it with you makes a huge difference, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, all the above, you know.
It does.
It's different. So for all of us, it's another reminder to build the support system, not when we're in crisis, but before the crisis comes, so that we have those people to lean on. We have those people, and vice versa. Be the friend that you want to be, right? So right. You build that support system, but being there for others as well, so that not as like, oh, I did it for them, they should do it for me. No, it's just we're cultivating relationships. And that's, you know, when we have those relationships, that being there for one another, it's just, you know, naturally flows out of that.
Really. Yeah. I just have to tell the quick little story about, like, it's scientific too. I like my blood counts were low. They take blood work all the time. Mm-hmm. And I actually spent the day with a friend right before I got my blood work, and all of my blood work was like beautiful the next day. And, you know, they're like, what were you doing? And I said, you know, I spent time with like a dear friend, and they're like, you need to do things that make you happy like that, because it truly does physically heal you as well as mentally. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. So thanks for sharing that personal example. Totally. And, you know, yeah, it's whether, you know, for me, it was writing in that time. For me, it was even for speech therapy. I remember when my therapist realized that, like, my faith was important to me and singing was important to me, instead of forcing me to read words and say words, we start singing. I could sing songs like I could talk. And me then too. When the music was stopped, and no words came out. Yeah. Not only music is therapeutic itself, again, more research proof, science proves that, but connecting to the things that you love, things you enjoy, literally rewires your brain. Yep. You know, for me, I saw that, you know, after having, you know, brain injury, but even when you're doing for something physical, like, you know, like the cancer, you know, it's that when you're, again, your brain is able to fire the right neurons in the right direction, right? That stimulate hope, that gives you, you know, joy, the dopamine and all the serotonin that you needed are being, you know, created in the moment when you're doing things that you enjoy, that builds your resilience, right? So connect with those people. That's a good tip. Before you go for your chemo, do something fun with a friend, you know, talk to a friend on the phone if you can't physically be together. It makes a difference. So thank you for even pointing that out. So then now you get to the point, like you've been shared away, like, you know, your friends are still continuing to support you, your church even supported financially. But coming to that decision, it's like, oh, I have to stay home. I have to pull away from what I do for a living. And for you, it's not just you and I are the same. It's not just a living. We love what we do. We see it more as a calling and a life mission rather than just a job. So for you to get to the point, like, I have to temporarily give this up, per se, or maybe still, for me, it was doing it in a different way that, you know, worked for me in that season, but it still felt like a temporary let go. Right. That, you know, not that I let myself down, but I had to put it down a little bit because my body needed me more than I could pour into anybody else at that time. But that alone is an overall emotional shift.
Yep.
It's a big loss.
Right. Yeah, like you said, it's grief. You know, I cried over it. I really wanted to be there for my students, and it's been such a hard year. And, you know, I think somebody said to me, you know, I think this is a good lesson for them to see, though, that sometimes, you know, you really do have to, you know, draw your boundaries and really just take care of yourself first. And, you know, I did work all through my treatment, and I was honest with them. You know, I said, you know, I have a scan tomorrow. I don't know what's going on, you know, so that they also got to kind of share in that struggle and see, you know, what it's like for somebody who kind of doesn't know what's going on and then, you know, working through all of that. So, yeah. And it's so nice. Like some of them still send me emails and, you know, they'll send cards like, you know, home. When I really just enjoy reading all of those things and staying in touch. And I always end any correspondence with my students with, I will see you next year because I'm coming back.
Yes. Coming back. Yeah. And that, you know, although I'm sure it was not easy to kind of be vulnerable like that in front of others who are depending on us, others that we want to pour into. But that was also teaching. You're teaching them by example, teaching that life can throw some hard things at you. And sometimes you don't know what the next step will be, but here's how I'm navigating mine. And hopefully you're picking up on how to navigate yours as well. And those life lessons are better than any math lesson, right? Yeah, they're better than any algebra, any, you know, science or whatever it is that we learn in school. Because things like this is real life. This applies in any and everything that they do later on. So thank you for continuing to teach, even when you thought you were not teaching.
Yep.
And I'm sure when you come back, you know, you continue teaching even more, not just in your subject, but because, you know, when you come back, you're teaching, hey, you can do this too, you know. And I know from my personal you know, experience, the more I go through hardship, the more compassionate I become. I can relate to people at a different level that's beyond my education or my degrees and anything else I could have learned in school. Good. And that is real connection. That is actually authentically helping people, because it's heart to heart, not heart to head, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So what are you doing now? I know you're busy with the treatments, right? But how else are you, you know, filling your time? Because, you know, not being at work full time, and, you know, it's not only the grief of like, oh, this was something I love that I have to, you know, kind of put aside for a little bit. It's like, now you have all this free time to fill, right? When you don't want to be thinking about stuff, you have too much time on your hands to think. So how are you keeping busy? First, I don't like the term keeping busy. Like, what are you doing that, you know, that's filling your cup? What are you doing that's not just filling your time, but also, you know, renewing your mind and, you know, strengthening you for this process?
Right. You know, I that was my biggest fear at first when I was like, I'm going to take this time off. Like, what am I going to do? You know, I get this like summer break anxiety because having large chunks of time that are like unscheduled and unfilled, like, is not great for my like depression and anxiety. But I'm just floored with how tired I can be. So I've been allowing myself to just do things that like, I feel like are guilty pleasures. Like, I'll just watch a bunch of TV and then, you know, fall asleep. And I think that's actually really good for my healing.
It sure is. So rest is very therapeutic. Yeah.
It has been. And I took up needlepoint, which I always joke because most people who have this particular type of cancer diagnosed after 60. So I always call this like, you know, this is my gram cancer. I'm going to do, you know, my gram thing. So, you know, I've been doing needlepoint, which actually has been really fun. And I have a friend who has a small shop that she's going to sell some of it at. So it's just fun things that I really feel like I didn't have time for. I've been reading. I have two dogs, so I try to take them for walks on my good days when I'm feeling like I can. And honestly, like catching up with friends and family, I feel like during the school year, you know, I barely talk to anybody because I'm so busy. So, you know, I take time to try to call my mom almost every day. My sister has been going through a lot with her husband. He has ALS and they've been in the hospital for like almost 2 months. So just kind of calling them and supporting them too. Yeah. I feel like I've been trying to focus more on my relationships and also just allowing myself to rest, which has honestly, I think, contributed so much for me to get through the chemo that I have so far.
On all accounts, you know, as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, I remember sleeping so much. I never slept so much in my whole life. But it's like your body just tired. And I'm like, you know, it's like, I didn't do anything. I didn't do physical therapy today. For me, like my brain was tired. But then, you know, the more I started reading and just researching how rest rejuvenates our minds and, you know, the brain cells, literally the brain cells in our mind, and reconnects the neurons. I'm like, literally, my occupational therapist, like, you need to sleep to heal. And I'm like, that's such a revelation that I need to hold on to, you know. And yeah, and so giving yourself that rest, it's important. But I think also, like, what you're sharing, you know, it's evidence of how when we go through those tough times, like, that really changes or impacts our life in such a way that, you know, it changes how we do life. It also helps us, you know, revisit our priorities, right? It's like people in life, you know, need more of my time. I need to invest more in this relationship. I need to invest more in me, whether it's learning a new hobby, you know, going to school. Like, I know people who end up earning degrees because, you know, physically, like, there was, you know, something happened, they couldn't do what they used to do. It's like, I'm going to be home, use this time to good use, right? Put this time to good use. So, you know, I encourage everyone listening, you know, do something fun, like Holly said, do, you know, reconnect with those, you know, rebuild and strengthen those relationships that you have, you know. And I also love what you say about you being there for your sister and her husband. It's so easy to think when we're going through something hard, like, oh my goodness, my life is so hard right now. This is terrible. I should be going through this, that we get so self-absorbed. No, in a way, not intentionally, but it still is self-absorption, like to call away this, right? That we, you know, that we don't always find the strength to pour into someone else, what we, you know, let alone acknowledge the other, or even notice or become aware of other people's struggles. But if we take the, you know, if we allow ourselves to do that, it's a beautiful thing where we are, yes, going for our own stuff, but also pouring to someone else that reminds us that we still can contribute even during our hardship.
Yep.
We can still help.
I remember when my sister, you know, was saying all these things about her husband and they were having to go into the hospital, and she's like, oh, I don't want to bother you with that. And I said, you better. You know, and I tell my friends this, you know, I want to hear your struggles, and like, don't diminish the things that you're going through, because if you don't share those things with me, like, then I just become a cancer patient. I'm not a friend. I'm not a sister anymore. And like, I really struggled with like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to lose my identity. And, you know, just making sure to focus on those relationships, like, really helps me like hold on to who I am.
Yes. Definitely. And when we go through, you know, chronic illnesses and things like that, your identity gets shifted unless you're careful, like you said, to remember I'm more than just a patient, you know, a cancer patient. I am a sister. I'm a wife. I'm a friend. You're a story teacher, you know, so all those things, and be able to nurture those parts that make you who you are outside of what you are dealing with.
Right.
You know, I think it's Maya Angelou that said, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but something about I can, you know, let what happens to me, you know, diminish who I am, or I can, you know, choose not to let it define me.
Right.
You know, and I think it comes to that, it's that choice. Like, this is hard. This, it shouldn't be this way. I, you know, we don't wish this on anyone, but yet I'm still who I am. Who am I outside of this? And how can I maintain my identity, the life that I need, the connection that I have, in spite or even while, during, you know, what I'm dealing with, so that it doesn't consume my life per se, but it becomes, again, just one part of me, not all of me. Well, thank you so much, Holly, for sharing here. And so as we close, any words of encouragement that you give someone else that might be going for cancer, you know, a cancer diagnosis, and just like, oh, I, you know, don't know what to do with this, and this is so hard. You know, if you don't, just sharing some words of encouragement in closing, and then how people can connect with you.
I think, you know, just being truthful with yourself and realizing and recognizing like this is hard, and giving yourself time to, like you said, grieve and, you know, be sad about it or mad or whatever it is you need to be about it. But, you know, don't ever lose sight of the hope that there is, you know, like my oncologist said, you know, we have this treatment, we cannot get into remission for a long time, you know, maybe even decades. And, you know, we have made so many strides in medicine that if it comes back, maybe the next time it comes back, we'll have a cure. You know, so always just trying to look for like the small things, even just like, I remember like, you know, being in my PET scan and like the big tube, and even just finding something small to get you through the hard times. Like after this, I just kept telling myself, like, I'm going to get a sprinkle donut, the biggest sprinkle donut that I can find. And, you know, even if you're having hard days, just find one thing to look forward to. I just feel like that's so important. I wear this shirt because I love this quote. It says, you can't wait until life's not hard anymore before you decide to be happy.
I love it.
It's actually from a fellow cancer patient. She was a singer and songwriter, and she actually did pass away this year, but she just had such a positive perspective of it all. And, you know, I think, you know, you're allowed to feel all the feelings. You don't have to fake being happy or being strong, but just make sure that you do see that there are things to always be hopeful for. So you can be sad but hopeful, or mad but hopeful. You can be all those things, but definitely don't lose hope.
Yes, definitely don't lose hope. I think that anchors that for all of us, no matter what it is we're dealing with, and allow yourself to have those feelings. And often we think that I cannot have a comfortable feeling and an uncomfortable one. I don't like saying bad and good feelings. All things are good. It's just, no, it's, some of them are more comfortable than others, but the comfortable and uncomfortable one can coexist. You know, I can be mad that this is happening and still be grateful that I have the care that I need, or grateful that I have, you know, friends and family around me. I can be, you know, sad that, you know, I'm not able to go to work and still be happy that I can sit and crochet, right? And have time to hang out with friends. So both can coexist. But at the end of the day, don't lose hope. allow yourself to go through the go through your feelings, process them. And also seek help too. I know already like mental health, you know, gets a bad rap per se. There's no stigma and we're making progress, but still not where we need to be. But some of the areas also that I see there continue to be barriers is that we think that I need to have depression, anxiety, you know, a clear mental health diagnosis in order to go see someone and talk about those things. But when you go for a chronic illness diagnosis, you need a safe place to go process because your emotion will go up and down and rightfully so. The grief will be there, the depression will come, the anxiety will come. And so I always tell people when you're going for a chronic illness, you're going for a new diagnosis, please also, in addition to all the specialists you're seeing, reach out and trying to get help for your mind. We all need that.
Absolutely.
You know, don't diminish that. Like, I'm already seeing the college. I'm already seeing, you know, the gynecologist, which really specialists you're seeing. Those are good, but also then see, you know, a mental professional. I remember hearing, which I thought was really clever, a oncologist who had a mental health professional on site. I'm like, that is so clever. We need to see more of that.
Absolutely.
More of that. Yeah. All right, my friend. Thank you again for all that you do. Thanks for being here. And how can people connect with you? People want to continue follow your journey or just, you know, send you a note of encouragement or maybe have a question after this.
So I do have an Instagram. It's called That Hershey Park Girl. Because I used to be a really big theme park enthusiast. I still am. But I've been posting a lot more there. I post about mental health even before this. Yeah. But I've also been doing my cancer journey updates there too. So Instagram. And I'm also available through email, hollymiller1886@gmail.com. But like I said, I'm very active on my Instagram account.
Okay, sounds good. And we'll make sure we share that and we share those links again. Ken, thank you so much, my friend. You have thank a blessed you. Day.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.